Shalom Rav, everyone. We're recording. Hope everyone's doing well. And I'm glad you got to experience the how annoying Zoom is and why people get burnt out from Zoom. The main avoda in these types of situations, this is important for our avoda Hashem, is not to get upset and to get angry and curse at people and curse at your at Zoom and curse at your computer and like get so angry. And I just remember a kid in Brandeis. He got so angry at something, he just like nailed his hand down on his computer and broke it. So true Misa. He had a lot of good stuff on his computer. He was like a whiz kid. So that's the main avoda, or when you're trying to connect with someone. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? You ever like do that with someone? Like it sounds like they're like, like the world is ending. Like, where are you? Okay, are you gonna live? Are you surviving? You're gonna die. It's like I can hear you. Like everyone, that's the avoda. Is like, don't like, you know, we have that split second to decide what we're gonna do. So don't like turn into like this monstrous, like impatient, like animal. So that's what we can learn from the frustrations of technology and Zoom, and that we should rely on the Masorah that we have in our hands to talk face to face with people and bust it down in real life. Obviously, this is a little bit out of control, but going forward from this, yes, the world has been changed now. And lots of great things have come out of this, but the ikkar is like, this is very nice, but the ikkar is like face to face time. And it's very sad that they call FaceTime FaceTime, because it's not real FaceTime. Anyone use FaceTime? Anyone catch that? Okay, fine.
Yeah.
It's not FaceTime. You can call it Zoom, you can call it BBM, you can call it WhatsApp video. It's like, don't delude yourself into thinking something that it's really not. Okay. Perek Hey, did everyone have everyone make a seal on Shabbos? What? You guys stink. I tell you, they make a party. You can't party? Pathetic.
I made almond cookies for Shabbos. Oh.
You made it for Shabbos, not for the seal. Noah, what'd you do?
I got little apple things.
What? Little apples?
The pastry thing.
Nice.
And some ice cream.
Nah, there we go. Okay, thank you. We had peaches for the first time. We had peaches. Very exciting. Shachianu. And we had Ragalach. We made Ragalach for Shabbat. No, where's your video? Mordechai, where's your video? I want to see your face.
My video should be on.
No, it's not on. This is terrible. All right, we're starting. If you're not here, it's okay. You can tell me. Just tell me you're leaving. I don't care. You can get credit. I don't really care. I just like... So, Perek Chamishi is the second to last Perek in Perkei Avos. And it's unique in that there's a lot of Mishnayos. It's not like the typical things we've been learning about. A lot of it's like history, like historical facts and statements. It's not so much like the Musar thing, so it's a little bit less obvious. And principles about my separations and other such things. So we'll try to draw out the you know, the teachings of Pirkei Avos and what the deeper meanings are behind what is being said here. So now we're going to do five Mishnayos in 5 seconds. Basar Mamaros Nivra Olam. Umatam Lomar. The world was created with 10 utterances. And what does this teach us? Valo B'mamar Achad Yichol Yisbaros. Like the world could have been created in... What's going on? What just happened? Like 10 Mordechai Moskowitz on your screen?
Two Mordechais and two Noahs.
Okay, great. All right. Either Noah or Mordechai there?
I have one for audio and one for video.
Okay. Does anyone see Noah? Okay.
I cannot see Noah yet.
Well, there's one Mordechai and one Mordechai Moskowitz, and we don't see either or hear either. They're both imposters. Anyways, Noah, we love you, even though we can't see you. Couldn't Hashem create the world with one utterance? Why do you have to make 10 utterances? Eli Barem and Shayim. Rather, to exact punishment and payment for the Rishayim who destroy the world which was created with 10 utterances, and on the flip side, to tain schar tov la tzadikim, to give reward to the tzadikim in order to that they upkeep the world which was created in 10 things. So obvious question is like, what's going on here? Why does that have to say the world, you know, destroying a world which was created with 10 utterances and upkeeping the world which was created with 10 utterances? We already know from the beginning of the mission that the world was created with 10 utterances. They're not destroying or upkeeping different worlds. So that's the question. So the idea is that why did it have to be created in 10 utterances? So the idea is, if it was created in one utterance, so the Svarim Kadosh will explain that the greatness, the revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have been so great and real and awesome, so it would have been too much. It would have been too much. I mean, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? And this is what Chassidus explains, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mitzamsem himself in this world. Mitzamsem is constricting, right? Think of a funnel. So that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to bring his divinity into the world. And to infuse spirituality into this world, he had to contract himself, constrict himself, smaller and smaller and smaller, like a funnel. And so we got to this world at the end, and that was enough. If it was like, the world was up here on the top with all of Hashem's like divineness, so like, we would like just like implode. Meaning we wouldn't have any free choice. We'd have to. It'd be very hard to like choose to do something wrong. Everything we want to do good. And if a person did something wrong, so then they'd have no chance of tshuva. in order to enable HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, let's call it, or light to become more physical, so he had to contract himself. And the way he contracted himself into this world so that the physical stuff could be infused with spirituality, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to have these different stages of mamaris, made it into different steps in order to break it down. Right? Imagine if I give you one massive like bag of, you know, cement to carry, you can't pick it up and carry it, it's too heavy. But if I break it into 10 bags or 10 steps, so then you're able to do it in time. So that's the idea, that why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to do it in 10 stages, as opposed to what? And then, because it's in 10 stages, let's say if you drop one bag of cement, not the biggest deal. Why you lose one, you still have 9 others. But let's say if you drop the one that you're carrying, it's all on the floor, so you lost all of it. So also, it's a way to, for the Rishayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his Chesed, did it, created in this way so that the Rishayim can have like multiple chances, that they're not going to destroy the world and ruin the world for everyone at once. That's the Rechaim of Lashon explains why it's in 10 stages. And then also on the flip side, for the tzaddikim, to give them multiple opportunities, so to speak, multiple stages of good that they can receive and that they can do. So you see, in the fabric of creation, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the ability that we to make it better for us in case we mess up. So we have a better chance at fixing. And then we'll have more opportunities to do good. Now let's go on to the next one. It's a weird mission, I know. All these things are like, I don't want to say, sorry, not weird, but they're like unusual. Like, if learning the first four prakim, you wouldn't expect this to be like the next thing. Like, start talking about how many utterances Hashem made, created the world, and how many generations there was from the beginning of Bereshis. Asar Doros Ma'adam V'Anoach, Mishnah Ben Perikei. There are 10 generations from Adam to Noah. Lo'odia Kamer Chabayim Levonav, to tell us how patient HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Shekol Doros Ayu Machizim Ba'in, because each generation would anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ad She'Bi Aleh Besmei Mabul. Excuse me, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to bring the Mabul. Until HaKadosh Baruch Hu bring the Mabul to destroy the world. Hey, Nathan. Welcome. Finally. Someone is able to join.
It started working.
All right, great. Sorry, blame it on Zoom. See, it's a horror. Sit your out here. It's the Islamic Jihad in Gaza trying to be Mabatu our Torah, but we will not stop. We'll not stop our Torah, Jihad. Wala Habar. Enod Milvado. Okay. Bad joke. They can actually shoot missiles at us. Okay. Anyways. You guys saw the missiles being fired before, right? Last year, watching fireworks. Shame on you! How many people are zoomed out, by the way, from their, like, sheer... Don't be shy. I, like, see your body language, even if you don't show your finger in the camera. It's like, oh, yeah. Okay, it's normal. Okay, no, thank you for the laugh. I don't even see you. I don't even hear you. I just see the yellow box go around you, so that's also body language. Yeah.
It's good enough, I guess.
Exactly. We should just smile the whole time at each other. That's it. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Okay, so Hashem created, there were 10 doros. So to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu's patience. And then Hashem destroys everyone. So yes, 10 generations is a lot of patience, but like, be patient for another 20 generations. Why do you have to destroy the world at that point? So so one, just at a glance, this is showing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very, very patient, because those 10 doros were really, 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 really bad until it got to the point where Hashem had to destroy it. The question is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to destroy it all of a sudden? I thought he's patient. Is he patient or is he destroying? Yes, he waited 10 generations. Wait more. Why did he have to destroy it? So Rav Tversky Shlita explains that it got to the point of no return. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like, there's no more patience anymore. And he explains as follows. Why? Because the people were in a state where they would not be able to do tshuva. Yeah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is patient, and that's showing that he's allowing those 10 generations for people to do tshuva. And then what happened? That's what he's waiting for. He's being patient so people will do tshuva, and then Hashem will forgive them, and then the world can continue going on. These people continue going on. So why is it all of a sudden that the tshuva, you know, the emergency tshuva latch, like, stopped, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to now destroy the world? Hashem is patient. You do wrong, Hashem is patient. You do tshuva. If you don't do tshuva, Hashem's still going to be patient. And then something happened in Dor HaMabul that, like, something happened there. So what happened? So we know in the Dor HaMabul, so they're doing Hamas. So what's Hamas? Hamas.
Violence.
What?
Violence.
Okay, yeah. Yes. The other obvious answer is the terrorist organization. Very good. Really, yeah.
I thought you meant, what does it translate to? In Tehillim, they translate it to violence, no?
Okay, that's why the terrorist group is called Hamas, because it's good violence. But yeah, someone has to answer it to say that. Yes, so violence. Right, so that's a Pasuk shot. Rashi says over there in Parshas Noach, they're doing Hamas. One is that they were stealing from one another. Now, what was the value? How much were they stealing? Pachot mishava uta. What does that mean? Are you allowed to steal something if it's less than a pruta? Is that considered stealing? If you're in a food court in the mall, whenever they open up, and they have a big thing of ketchup packets. Let's say if you're in Yeshiva Leva Torah, and there's lots of chad pa'mi out on the table, and you take a fork, which is less than a pruta, and you want to take that back to your room without receiving permission, is that considered stealing? No. Because that sign has to be at least the value of a pruta. This is a connect fork piece, not a pruta, by the way. Yeah. If it's less than the value of a pruta, so then it's not considered theft. So what were these people doing? They were stealing. But they're like, it's less than a pruta, so I'm not really stealing. Not only that, there are three types of theft. One is a ganav. What's a ganav? When does he steal? During the day or at night?
At night.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. And then There's the Ganav, and then there's the Gazlan. When does the Gazlan steal?
During the day.
Right. And then there's something called Chamsan. What's that? Someone who forces someone, he wants to steal something, but he's like a nice guy. So he's like, I'm going to, like, he takes it from him and then gives him money as if he's, like, paid for it. The guy doesn't necessarily want it, like, sell it. I want, this is mine. You're stealing from me, but you're, like, doing me a favor and paying me for your theft. So so what's the worst out of all of these? The guy at night, the guy during the day, or the guy, the last guy? What do you say? Guy who breaks into your house at night and, like, points a gun at you? It's pretty bad. Or midday, he kicks you out of your car. And...
maybe at night.
So, like, so just for the sake of time, it's the last guy, the guy who's stealing something from you and paying you for it because he doesn't think he's stealing. He thinks he's paying for it. He doesn't realize he's doing anything wrong. The same with the guy who justifies taking the ketchup packets from the Chadar Ochel or the fork from the Chadar Ochel. He's like, it's less than Shavu Pruta. That's not theft. It's not theft. So you can't do tshuva if you don't think you did anything wrong. So what happened in the Dor HaMabul is they thought everything we're doing is fine. They didn't think they were doing anything wrong. And once HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that, so then he's like, my patience is up. Because they're never going to do tshuva because they don't think they've done anything wrong. And therefore, he had to destroy the world. The limud for us is a lot of times we delude ourselves into thinking that certain things we're doing are okay, or certain things that we're doing, there's no problem with that. I'm sure everyone has something in their life they're like that you justify why I'm doing something. It's okay. It's not a big deal. But that's not the case. We have to be honest with ourselves and realize and think psychologically, like, am I deluding myself into thinking that something's okay? This is like very common with addictions where we think like we make rationalize things and we rationalize things are okay. Let's say if you'd asked your grandparents like 20 years ago, like, is a marijuana, is that's fine, right? Marijuana's okay, right? No, obviously not. But what do we say today? Right, it's awesome. Everyone should do marijuana. Like, all my friends' parents are doing marijuana. Like, wealthy, like, you know, judicial system people who, like, have, like, you know, executives and everything. They're doing weed just because they legalized it in Canada or in L.A. in whatever state it is. And the idea is if you can't stop it, legalize it, is just ridiculous. And all of a sudden, like, where's that list that your grandmother has of, like, the 30 bad things weed does to you? All of a sudden, those 30 things don't apply anymore just because we legalized marijuana? No, but we've come to rationalize it and say these things are now okay. And like, if anyone, like, you'd say, like, you know, murder is fine. It's okay. So obviously someone will look at you and you're crazy, but like if you spoke to someone 6 years ago, we're like, can you abort? We mentioned this, doing abortions. They're like, no, you can't do an abortion. No one can do an abortion. That's murder. But today, abortion, whatever you want, not a big deal. 20 years ago, 10 years ago, grandma, can I do weed? No, are you crazy? And today it's like, grandma, you want to smoke a joint with me? Yeah. Hopefully your grandma is like, I don't know, maybe your grandmother smokes also weed. But I'm saying that's where things can go. And when we start rationalizing, so we have to be very, very careful. It's a very tricky thing. And that's what happened in the Dor HaMabul. That's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to destroy the world. It's like, because everyone thought they're doing everything is mutter. Everything's fine. But really they weren't. And that's why Hashem, even with his great patience, if they didn't rationalize that they what they were doing and saying, I'm not stealing, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have destroyed. There would have been no Mabul. Because Hashem's patience is so great. No matter how many bad things we do, Hashem is waiting there for us. He just wants us to do tshuva. However, if we get to the point where like we don't think we have to do tshuva because what we're doing is totally mutter, so then that's where you can get into trouble. And that's what we see from this Mishnah. You have to be very, very careful with what we put into our minds as being okay. And if someone's grandmother wants to, you know, you know, for a birthday present, gets weed for their grandchild. And I'm sure there are grandmothers who are doing this. So if it's one of us, you can't speak for other people, so we have to be like ask her, like, you know, 20 years ago, grandma, or 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, like, would you have done this? No. But now, just because they legalize it, it's fine? Doesn't make sense. So that's where society gets tricky. And that's where society can really, really be a dangerous place. And that's where we see what's happening in the world, where society just, I'm sure you can go through a lot of things which are now like legal. But abortion, no one ever abort, you know, 60 years ago. You barely heard of it. You know, clinical suicide, all these types of things. So we have to be careful and beware. Just because it's mutter according to the law doesn't mean it's mutter according to the law, the true law. Okay. So that's an important limud to have. Mishnah Gimel, Sar Doros Minoch, about Avram. There are 10 generations from Noach to Abraham to Kama to tell us how patient HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shekol Doros Yuh Machisim Ubayin Atshaba Avram Vinim Kibos Chalkulam. Because all the generations from Noach to Avram, again, they were doing bad, but Hashem didn't destroy them. Hashem just gave all this chara that they could have gotten to Avram Avinu. So again, same idea about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's patience, that no matter how many times we mess up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's still there and he's forgiven us. Even if every Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur we come and we're clapping Al Chet for the same thing for the past 18 years of our life, for the past 30 years of our life, for the past 40, 50, 60 years, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's still, never give up, not even for the last second. Even the Gemara says, even if there's a sharp sword on your neck, don't be Messiah Ishman Rachman. Even if there's a sharp sword, a guy's about to kill you, don't give up hope. There's a Maisa of a Jew from England. This is a crazy story. So him and his friend were in the Holocaust. And he was mischazik, been mourning the whole time. And his friend's like, come on, give me a break. We're going to die. That's it. He's like, no, we have to be mischazik in the Muna, in the Muna, Muna, Muna. Finally, the day came. They're being pushed into the gas chambers. They're in line to go into the gas chambers. And his friend said to him, he's like, yeah, where's your Muna now? Where's your Muna now? Like, it's over. We're done. I've been telling you this whole time. Why you waste your time in your Muna business? And then, bitachon Hashem, Hashem's going to save us. No, he's not. We're going the way. So so he's like, no, I still, Muna Shlema and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even the Cherev Chada, even if it's resting on your neck, don't be Messiah Yishman Rachim. Don't give up hope that Hashem can save you. And they were at the end of the line, and they pushed them in, everyone in. They both went into the gas chamber, Hashem Yerachim, and they couldn't close the door. The guy who was the Muna was a big guy. He's fat, and they couldn't close the door. It was so Hashem Yerachim, it was so jam-packed, the sardines to kill them, Hashem Yikom Damo, they couldn't close the door. So they opened the door, and they looked around, and they pulled out that big guy, the Muna guy, and pulled him out, closed the door, and gassed everyone, Hashem Yerachim. And he told every year of Pesach, he tells everyone the story, even at the last second, don't be Mishyayish, that Amunah saved his life. His friend, unfortunately, was killed with the rest of the Kedoshim in that gassing, but his Amunah, even at the last minute, he held on tight, and it saved his life. So even at the last, I've been doing the same thing for how many times? Don't be Mishyayish, don't give up hope, Chas v'Shalom. Hashem is Erech HaPayim. For generations and generations and generations. Many doors. And a door back then was a long, long time. A door today is like 2 days. Is a door. 2 years is like 10 years. What happens today in a year or two is like what used to happen in like 10 years back in the day. So you guys have lived through many generations already. Don't be Mishyayish. The other thing to learn from this is that who did Avraham Avinu grow up with? What surroundings? Terrible people. His father was a Baal Avodah Zarah. It's Terah. Everyone was bad around him. Everything was crumb. And despite that, he rose up and he discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even if people are bad behind us, don't throw in the towel. Don't say, I'm done. Shiaish. Zeo. Finished. I'm going to, what's that pre-college place in Montreal that everyone, JSAP, JCAP, G-Pre-JAP, what's it called?
Sejab.
Even I'm going to Sejab. Even if I'm going to Rutgers, even if I don't know what I'm doing, even if I'm going to University of Binghamton, Albany, Chvesnish, wherever you guys, even if I'm going to Shanabed, don't say, no, you can rise up to reach high levels. That's why I became a rabbi, because I went to Brandeis. True story for another time. But, Anyways, sorry, it's overtime, but we're going to go out. You can leave if you want. We started like 20 minutes late. Okay, Mishnah Dalet. Asar Nisyonas Nasa Avim Avini. The Amad Bekulam 10 tests were given to Avim Avinu, and he stood in all of them. Lodiya Kama Chibatosha Avim Avinu, to show how dear Hashem's love is from Avim Avinu. So interesting to note that if you look in the previous Mishnah, Mishnah Gimel, when it refers to Avraham, it refers to him as Avraham, not Avram Avinu. Asar Doros Minoch Vad Avraham. Now all of a sudden, it's a certain Avram Avinu. So why all of a sudden did they change? So Chaim V'Lajan says that he now became the father of our nation. And all these midos that he acquired and nisyonos that he passed, which some of them were out of this world, so that is embedded in our genealogy, in our DNA. And just like a father passes on midos and genes to the future generations, so too that is passed on to us as Jews. That in a certain inside, in the neshama of every single Jew, are aspects of Avraham Avinu's character traits and his hitnahagut, his the way he acted and behaved, and those things are put inside of us. For example, where is it that a Jew has the ability to just dial Pikidash Hashem, to throw themselves into a furnace, into the gas chambers of Pikidash Hashem? Because that got ingrained to them from Avraham Avinu, because Avraham Avinu threw himself into a fiery furnace. And that's been passed on. If you look at any other, I don't know, you have to do a history thing, but if you look at other people, like how many other religions would people dial Pikidash, whatever their thing is? Okay, extreme, like brainwashed terrorists, I don't think fall into that category. Hashem Yirachem. They can be brainwashed from the time you're a kid to thinking that like the whole purpose of life is to kill Jews. So, I'm saying, but for this is a mitzvah that we have ingrained inside of us from Avraham Avinu. And it's passed down from generation to generation. Have mysterious nefesh that's embedded into our teva. Another thing that Siyo Shalom says, just like Avraham Avinu had 10 nisyonos, so too every yid has 10 nisyonos. A person is going to have 10 big tests in his life that he has the ability to overcome, which he learned from Avraham Avinu. To look as a nisayon is the ability to raise up. Nes means to raise a flag. So a nisayon is the ability to raise ourselves up and to become greater. And that's how we have to look at a challenge or a setback in our life. It's an ability to grow from it. It's not easy. It's not always the way we want it to be, 100%. But you create resilience and you grow stronger and greater. I mentioned this before with my friends in Mashiach. So many people are having such a hard time with Corona because they've never faced anything difficult in their lives. And finally they're like, face something difficult. They break down. So going through difficult things, obviously it's tough and it's difficult and it's not enjoyable, but it creates a resilience, it creates strength and koach, and we should look at these as opportunities to grow. Listen, you're going to have to go through this, like, this whatever it is anyway, so you can try to go with a raised head, held head. Like, we can go through Corona, there are two ways to look at it, or with three ways, we said. One is, like just being in denial about it, and, like, be upset and angry at everyone, everything, and be depressed and broken from it. Again, if you have depression or anxiety or things like that, those are like, you know, those are out of your control. But a person who actively is like going down that path. Then there's a person who's totally like, I'll just keep on watching Netflix until I like can leave my house. And then there's the third person like, let's look at this as an opportunity to grow. Let's create memories. Let's do things we've never done before. Let's try to change the world and change ourselves. So that's an amazing thing. And I hope the world will be changed in positive ways after this is over, Bezrat Hashem. And the last part of the Mishnah, is that to make it known how dear Hashem's love was from Avraham Avinu, from Avraham Shurashlita, says that sometimes you have to let a person know how dear he is and how special he is. And then to tell him that, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're important. Don't think you're not important. Hashem loves you. You have the ability to overcome nisyonos. You have the ability to grow. You have the ability to flourish. You can be an amazing doctor. You can be an amazing chemist. You can be an amazing accountant. You can be an amazing plumber. To build someone up. Lehodia. To let them know how kamachibaso. So Amrav, you know, how great and special the person is. That's an important avoda. Again, we're all teachers. We're all teachers in whatever format it is, to let someone know that they're great. That they can, they have, they think, ah, I can't do that, I can't do it. Tell them you can do it. Right? The Jordan muscle. So did everyone finish watching the Jordan thing? Yeah. Great. I haven't even started yet. I'm not sure when I'll have time to start. So Jordan was told he couldn't do it. And then he told himself, no, I can do it, I can do it. Sometimes you just have to let a person know that they can really do things and really accomplish things in life. And that can make all the difference. Very important. Okay, last Mishnah for today. Mishnah Hey Perakei. Taran, taran, tan, tan. Just said.
Hey.
Thank you. Let's try that again. Without like the 15 second. Can you imagine being at like a hockey game, the Stanley Cup Championships, and it's like da 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 da, and everyone's just quiet for like 10 seconds, and then like one little guy in the corner is like, hey! You know? Let's try this one. Shabbat Shalom.
Hey.
Hey.
Let's try this again. I'm going to unmute everyone. How do I do that again? Participants, unmute all.
Everyone, it's okay. We're unmuted. We're all unmuted.
Okay, great. Shabbat Shalom.
Hey.
Hey.
Ta-dan, ta-dan, ta-dan.
Hey.
What's that one?
Ta-dan, ta-dan, ta-dan. Hey. Ta-dan, 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 ta-dan. Hey. Okay, it's so everyone. Mishnah.
Hey.
Hey.
Bye, guys. I'm leaving. No, joking. I'll just finish it. Pathetic. Okay. There are 10 miracles that happened to our forefathers in Mitzrayim. Hey. And there are 10 makos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought on Mitzrayim. And 10 on the Yam. Okay, so Hashem did 10 nisim. In Mitzrayim for Am Yisrael, and he did 10 nisim at Kriyas Yamzuf, and he brought 10 makos on Mitzrayim, in Mitzrayim, and he brought 10 makos on them also at the Yam. Okay. So what are the 10 nisim that happened to Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim? The 10 makos didn't affect them. Those were the 10 nisim that they didn't have any of the 10 makos affecting them. So an important thing is that pretty sad, I don't want to say it, but the Midrash says that when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, you know what they brought with them? I'm just looking for like a teddy bear. Besides their teddy bears and stuffed animals and blankies, they also brought their idols. They brought idol Micha. Can you imagine that? Like they brought their idols with them after they just experienced everything. They like couldn't like go of their idols, and they're like walking through like Yam Suf with like idols, like Shemirachim. So many times people say like, only if Hashem would like make a nace in my life, I believe in God. Rabbi, I don't believe in God. Why not? Because I don't feel the divine providence like that our forefathers in the desert felt. Okay, and if you did, you would like believe in God? Yeah, of course, Rabbi. Yeah, what about in Mitzrayim? They like saw 10 makos. You need 10 nisim, or like is one enough? One's enough, Rabbi. Well, they had 10 in Mitzrayim, buddy, and they brought their idols in the Yam Suf. And what about like if bread started falling from heaven? Would you believe in God? Yeah. Oh yeah, what about in the Midbar? They had water and mun coming miraculously and birds coming everywhere, and yet they made a golden calf. So don't give me that. Don't give me you need nisim. That if you believe, you believe. If you don't want to believe, I can give you all the nisim in the world. You're not going to believe. And so many times we see things with our own eyes and we just like don't believe it. You have to be honest. This is important. So if you're going to believe, you're going to believe. If you're not going to do something, you're not going to do something. This is important also when you get into discussions with people in college and in life or whatever it is. Like They're trying to convince you of your of their opinion, and you're trying to convince them. If they don't agree with your opinion and they're against it, you're not going to convince them. So don't waste your time arguing with them. It was like that mice I told you with the Baba Sharebis of Lady, with the guy who sent them the letters to debunk theories of mice abrasions. And the Rebbe sent them back a sitter, and then he sent them back a sitter, and then he sent them back a mezuzah or whatever it was. And 20 years later, he shows up for Yechidus with the Rebbe. He's, Rebbe, you know who I am? And he's like, no. He's like, I'm the guy who wrote these letters. Yes, I remember you. Why didn't you debunk me? And the Rebbe's like, I could have debunked everything you said, but I would have lost the opportunity to make a friend. So yes, you can disprove the other person, but if they don't want to believe, they're not gonna agree with you. And that's what happens. If you need nisim, when things are like this, when things are like that, they don't believe. No, it's either you want it or you not. Or you don't want it. Oh, if I have better roommates in yeshiva, then I would have really gotten up for shachris. No. Yes, if your roommates are up to 3 o'clock in the morning and you can't make sleep, so that's one story. But the Rebbe didn't. No, if you want to do something, you'll do it. Stop making excuses in your life. Don't be a sorry person. Oh, only this, only that. I would have done this. No. If you want to do something, you do it. If you don't want to do it, you don't want to do it. So that's one limud from the Mishnah. The other limud is to teach us Kriyas Yamsuch. The things we said are like Kriyas Yamsuch. Making parnasa is like Kriyas Yamsuch, as hard as Kriyas Yamsuch. Going to the bathroom is as hard as Kriyas Yamsuf. Getting married in Shalom Bayis is as hard as Kriyas Yamsuf, the Gemara says. So what happens? We're married, we go to the bathroom, and we have money in the bank account. What happens? Not enough. We take it for granted. Because we get used to these miracles that are happening every single day. The fact that the yam splits and the yam stays in one spot and doesn't split should also be a miracle. And the fact that the yam stops at the border of the sea is also a miracle. And the fact that I'm alive is also a miracle. What happens is we get used to things and we take it for granted. These miracles that happen every single day in our life. Oh, a baby's born, it's a miracle. What about me being alive is not a miracle? Such a miracle, the baby aborted. And God willing, when you have children, you'll realize how it is a miracle. What about that the baby's alive? And what about that there's a father and a mother? What about that the father and mother come together and create a baby and a baby grows inside a stomach? And like, do you guys realize you're in a stomach of your mother for like 9 months? Do you realize that? Some a little less, some a little more, whatever. But that's not a miracle? That you were in the womb of a person and now you're a person? Like you didn't come out of a toaster oven, guys. And I just like break it to you, okay? You didn't like show up on the doorstep. You're like created inside of another human body. That's not a miracle. We take these things for granted. Things which are staring us in the face that we're all miracles. We're all miracles, right? And what happens is we get used to things and we take it for granted. So I'll end with this. As many of you noticed, my glasses are different today. I'm wearing these all the time. So these have a very big black rip and you always see it. So these, I finally got fixed. And last night, I couldn't find my glasses. And I said to my family, anyone know where my glasses are? And they look at me like they're laughing. He's like, you're wearing them. So what happened? I got so used to these and seeing the rim all the time that I didn't even realize I was wearing my glasses now because there's no rim. When we get used to things, we don't even see things when we have on. All the needs of our life, we just get used to and we take it for granted. We don't even see them in front of our own eyes. Like I didn't even see I was wearing my own glasses. And that's what happens in life. We don't realize that we're freaking nays. We don't realize we have food in our refrigerator, it's a nays. We go to the bathroom, that's a nays. We have parents, we have shalom bias, we're not killing each other. I see all of you guys are not killing each other except for all of us, it's like taking a gun and running. That's a nays. Don't take these things for granted, guys. Recognize that it's a nice, just like a Kriyas Yamsuf. Shabbat Shalom, Shabbat Tov. Appreciate all the good in our lives and be blessed with a meaningful day in life.